This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Longtime Los Angeles-based progressive political activist and politician Tom Hayden has died. He was 76 years old. In his youth, Hayden was best known for his civil rights and anti-war activism and for being a member of the Chicago Eight, facing a highly politicized trial for his actions during the 1968 Democratic National Convention. He went on to run for office several times in California, including for mayor of Los Angeles and governor of the state. Eventually, he was elected a state assemblyman. Hayden championed a wide variety of progressive causes and issues and wrote several books, remaining active until the end. Joining me now is a journalist who is intimately familiar with Hayden's career and work and knew him personally, Larry Bensky, longtime award-winning print and broadcast journalist, best known for his work on KPFA Pacifica Radio, where he won the George Polk Award for his coverage of the Iran-Contra hearings. He's written for The Nation magazine and was a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Times Sunday Book Review. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Good to be with you, Sonali, although it's a sad occasion.
It is. Certainly, Tom Hayden had been on my program several times. I was a regular on KPFK, my home station in Los Angeles. He was based in LA and certainly a huge fixture here in our city. Well, for those people, particularly our younger audience members who are not really familiar with Hayden and his early political work that set the stage for his later politics, the time when he was really a street rabble-rouser, how do you sort of explain his legacy from those early years in the 60s?
Well, I'd explain it the way he explained it. He was of Irish-American heritage. He always identified with the oppressed in Ireland. His grandparents had emigrated to the United States in the mid-19th century, and he retained and had from a very young age a clear sense that the oppressed of the earth were being unjustly oppressed and that he was going to do something about it if he could. As a young student at the University of Michigan, he used his extraordinary verbal gifts to become a journalist, and he was editor of the Michigan Daily, the student newspaper there, and at the same time got involved in campus politics, which were quite in sync with the civil rights movement and very quickly with the anti-Vietnam War movement. From there, he moved on into various national organizations, Students for a Democratic Society. And when I first met him, Sonali, he was working with something that I think is probably not going to be mentioned very much in his obituaries, unfortunately. He was working with something called the Newark Community Project, which was an effort on the part of the mostly white university-educated youth who were in Students for a Democratic Society to go into the most affected communities in the United States, including Newark, New Jersey, and work with local people there who were trying to get better conditions for those who lived there. This would be something as simple as getting regular garbage collection or anti-eviction ordinances. And Tom lived and worked in the center of Newark, New Jersey. When I first met him, he invited me out there. I was living in New York, my hometown. And I looked around me and went to a meeting or two with him. And I said, Tom, do you have any idea what you're doing here? You're from rural Michigan. This is the heart of the most oppressed community, one of the most oppressed communities in the United States. And he said, this is where I need to be. And that's always where he needed to be, if not physically, at least spiritually in his heart. He wanted to be in contact with, he didn't want to be an ideological political leader. He wanted to be in contact with those who were the most in need of intervention to better their lives.
How far back did your relationship, your friendship with him go? I mean, what you just referred to was pretty early.
That would have been around 1969 or 1970.
Wow. And so, of course, it was in the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago where he and seven others were arrested for their political activism and faced a prolonged and highly public trial. That put him on the national map, didn't it, Larry?
It did indeed. He was one of the leaders. It was an egalitarian organization, the Chicago Eight, who are frequently referred to in a racist way as the Chicago Seven. They leave out Bobby Seale, leader of the Black Panthers, who was also on trial then. Tom had, at that point, and I had become quite close, and he recruited me to be one of those who came to Chicago and was a replacement in the office that was organizing his defense in order to have spokespeople there, in order to have organizers. And I was, you might say, Tom Hayden's protege in that office, although I was 3 years older than he was. And I worked in that office, and I attended the trial in the day and stayed up all night, every night, with his lawyers and him, trying to figure out what to do in order to get a fair version of what was going on in that courtroom out to the rest of the country. Tom was very conscious of media. He was, as I said, a skilled writer and editor. He wrote something like 12 books and had written dozens and dozens of articles down into recent years. And so Tom wanted the truth to come out, which was basically my goal in my life and has been and always has been when I worked for Pacifica as well. Tom and I shared the conviction that if enough people knew the truth about the foreign and domestic policies of United States government and governments internally as well as externally, they would do something about it. They would be as outraged as we were. And so that was the bond that we had and that so many other people had in those years.
Now, tell us about Tom's relationship with writing what was considered a seminal document that sort of paved the way or laid a framework for a vision for the left, and that was the Port Huron document, Port Huron Statement. That was in 1962, actually a few years before the Chicago Eight.
Yes, and it was before I met him, and it was when I was actually living in France. So I had no part in that, despite what my CIA file, which I've never sent, may say. Tom was, as I said, a writer and a thinker. And he was very well educated, not just through his attendance at the University of Michigan, but he was self-educated. He read enormously in political philosophy and history and doctrine. And when it came time to draft that doctrine, the Fort Huron Statement, he was joined by many other academics and students and scholars, most notably Staunton Lind, at that time Yale University, in order to try to find a framework for what had been going on actually for over 100 years then, which was the ability of people who were oppressed to organize themselves and to have a common framework and words that they could point to and get others to sign on as a way of getting other people's loyalty and energies exercised. So the Port Huron Statement was a very, very important statement, and it was seen and signed on to by thousands eventually of other people who became activists, mostly in the anti-war movement, but also, of course, in the civil rights movement as well as in the women's movement.
What was behind the transition that Tom had between being this street activist who led movements and was, you know, agitating from the outside to wanting to agitate from within? In California, he, you know, was, of course, famous for his relationship with Jane Fonda, but then also entered California politics. Ran a few times unsuccessfully, eventually, of course, became a state assemblyman. And what was that? What was behind that transition?
What was behind that transition was that he saw that the movement of the streets had reached its limit and that the suites were still determining what was happening in the streets. And so he determined that if he was going to be effective, he would try to get into the suites. He ran for Senate, people should remember, in 1976 against another Democrat and got 40% of the Democratic vote in California, which was not nothing for somebody who was virtually unknown at the time. And that remained, and I think still remains, the high watermark of votes that a leftist progressive got statewide in California. And although he lost, and eventually John Tunney, the Democratic senator who was kind of a centrist, he lost to a Republican, it gave Hayden the understanding that there was something out there that he could do if he was elected, which he couldn't do non-elected. People would return his phone calls. They'd come to his press conferences. If he got arrested, they would cover it. If he issued a statement, they would cover it. And so he recognized that the rather wealthy part of Los Angeles, coastal Los Angeles, that he was then living in, had a possibility for him to get himself elected and to have a voice in state government. And so he ran for state assembly. people need to remember, this man was in the California legislature for 18 years. This is not some guy who dropped in and dropped out. He had a very dedicated presence, a very lonely presence at first in the California legislature, but he was a factor and a force in Sacramento. He made alliances with Jerry Brown during the first Governor Brown's incarnation in the late 1970s, supported him for president in 1982, organized all over the state using chapters of his own organization, Hayden's own organization, in order to get work going on the ground. He was a very effective politician in that sense. On the other hand, the California legislature then and now was basically an elitist, rather corrupt organization, which is not representative at all of the grassroots of the people, most of whom don't bother to vote in legislative elections anyway, state legislative elections. But Tom had his issues. And once Tom got an issue, he didn't let go of it. He was that way about the Vietnam War. He was that way about civil rights. And he eventually became that way for the issues that I think he's most going to be remembered for, environmental issues. It's because of Tom Hayden and Proposition 61 that if we now pick up a can in the supermarket and look at it, the ingredients are listed. The percentages of things in those ingredients are listed. That we have warnings in places that have toxic substances used. All of this came about with Tom Hayden and a dedicated group of environmentalists all throughout the state of California deciding that they could do something through the electoral system, if not in the legislature, then propositions like Proposition 61 getting passed by public pressure. This, I think, will remain one of his lasting legacies.
It's incredible. It wasn't as though he had any single issue. He, had such a broad perspective on progressive politics. I mean, the last time I'd had him on was to talk about Cuba, because he'd written a book about Cuba and was intimately familiar and involved in that struggle. But as you point out, of course, he was a very important environmental activist in Southern California. He was involved with former gang members. He was involved with, all sorts of, I can't even try to come up with an exhaustive list of all of his issues, but maybe you could, Larry, all of the issues near and dear to Tom's heart, not just issues around organizations doing work on the outside, but as his own career reflected, doing and speaking about electoral politics, which he also, till the very end, was active on. He attended the Democratic National Convention this summer in Philadelphia.
Yes, my final contact with him was this summer via email when I was writing to take him to task for supporting Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. And
he alienated a number of people for so early on throwing his support behind Clinton, yeah.
Well, he didn't alienate me because I knew him really well, and I don't hold one thing against a person that I really love and cherish and admire as I did Tom Hayden. But we certainly had our differences around that issue, as we did about other issues. Look, Sonali, you say all the issues that he was involved in and got passionate about. I don't agree that you and I aren't there. In fact, knowing you a little bit, I think you and I are there. That every time you or I pick up the Los Angeles Times or the New York Times every single day, we could take a red pen, and in your case, since you're still active and I'm not in journalism, probably do circle something and say, how the hell could this be? We've got to talk about this. We've got to talk about that. Right. But Tom Hayden was one of us. There was nothing that he would see, from the question of Syrian refugees to the question of the inequalities in the educational system in the United States, to the destruction of public education via so-called charter schools. I mean, all of these things would get him passionate. And his passion informed his approaches to things. And I think he did justice to all of them in various measures over the years.
Well, Larry, I it is the highest form of praise for you to place me in the same circle as yourself and Tom Hayden. I didn't know Tom that well, but I knew him well enough to have had him on my program a few times, interacted with him. I want to pick up on one thing you said earlier, which was that he knew the importance of media. And this is something that I think sometimes on the left we don't pay enough attention to or just sort of sweep aside. He knew that because of his time with the Chicago 8, because of his relationship with Jane Fonda, he was considered a celebrity figure. And he used that in the best way an activist could. He used it to his advantage. And how important was that part of his legacy? Because he was featured on the cover of, you know, several magazines, like celebrity magazines, as he was featured in political journals as well. And that's rare.
It was very rare. But don't forget, the reason why he got that legitimacy was not because of the covers of the magazines. It was because of that slide that crawls across the bottom. And when the slide crawling across the bottom said, Tom Hayden, D, State Senator, California, that legitimized him in the eyes of the establishment media. We've tried, God knows you and I have tried, Sonali, and many others over the years to create an alternative media in this country. We've never come close to being able to get the kind of traction that the right-wing media owned by corporate interests have gotten. And Tom understood that in order to say what he wanted to say, even if it was just in a soundbite of 30 seconds or something like that, he had to have legitimization. Getting elected to those offices of state assembly and state senator and trying for more, trying to be mayor of Los Angeles, trying to be senator from California, as we said, trying for more, he would again be identified as candidate for that. So it gave him entry. And without entry and access, you can't get the word out. We have been stymied in this country about having progressive political voices do that for many reasons. One way to do it is the way that Tom chose, and I think he did right by it.
Larry, thank you so much for spending this time with us and sharing the legacy of Tom Hayden. Thank you so much. I'm sure we'll have you back on in the near future again on the program.
Thank you for all your good work, Sonali.
Larry Bensky is a longtime award-winning print and broadcast journalist, best known for his work on KPFA Pacifica Radio, where he won the George Polk Award for his coverage of the Iran-Contra hearings. He's written for The Nation magazine. He was a regular contributor to the Los Angeles Times Sunday Book Review and a longtime friend and colleague of the late Tom Hayden. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on twitter.com/RU with Sonali.